You're now plugged in to the Delphi podcast.
Hey everyone, I just hopped off an insightful conversation with SEC Commissioner Hester Peirce and Gabe Shapiro, our GC at Delphi Labs who has deep legal and regulatory expertise. The conversation centered around the SEC's approach to crypto. We delved into the current regulation by enforcement approach, which has created frictions with developers, the influence that other countries that are more pro-crypto have on the SEC's position, as these countries have attracted builders, and her own dissenting opinions on recent cases. Commissioner Peirce is extremely approachable, and I applaud her work in helping to make the U.S. a place for builders and developers. With that, let's dive into the episode. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Delphi podcast. I'm your host, Tommy, and I'm joined by SEC Commissioner Peirce and Gabriel Shapiro, who is our GC at Delphi Labs. Commissioner, I want to really thank you for your time and coming back on our podcast. We're all huge fans of your work and everything that you're pushing for. And we want to thank you for your efforts in attempting to get the SEC up to speed on the facts on the ground to arrive at a sensible policy stance in crypto. So for everyone at Delphi, we just want to start off by offering our thank yous to you.
Well, thanks, Tommy. Thanks, Gabe. And it's great to be with you all. I'm going to give you my standard disclaimer, which is that my views are my own views, not necessarily those of the SEC or my fellow commissioners. And I think it's pretty obvious I haven't been that successful yet, although I did just put out a dissent with one of my fellow commissioners. So I feel like, you know, we're making progress.
Yeah, no, we're excited to see that. And I'll start off with questions, and then I'll shoot over to Gabe. But this is a bit of a longer one, but you seem to be in the minority among SEC leadership in acknowledging that the SEC is engaging in some sort of regulation by enforcement on crypto, and that this might be counterproductive. You noted that the SEC's admonishments to come in and talk to us, and they often result in more enforcement actions rather than a compliance path for innovative projects. In contrast, a lot of the lawyers that our legal team talked to have told us that the EU and other countries, you can call up your regulator and work with them and chat with them. I know how hard the SEC and its staff work, and I give a ton of credit to you guys for all of your hard work. But from a competitive standpoint, it seems that it's really hard for developers to be heard and to work with the SEC. Do you think that there'll be a tipping point where other countries being more open to working with developers eventually force the hand or influence a more enabling SEC stance? Sorry for the long question, but...
Oh, that's okay. And I mean, I agree with you that we're not in a good place right now. I feel like we're in a little bit of a dysfunctional relationship right now where, you know, both sides are saying things and not really sitting down and having constructive conversations. So I think it could be helpful that other jurisdictions are moving a little more quickly in terms of maybe pushing us to do the same thing. But I think we also in the United States tend to have a pretty US-centric view. And we are the place where people want to come. They want to build things here. They want to work here. And so I think we take advantage of that in the sense that sometimes we don't move as quickly as maybe some other jurisdictions do. There's a good piece of that too, right? There's a reason why we are the capital markets that we are. It's because we do take our time to write good rules and to implement them in ways that make sense. And I think that is what my colleagues here at the SEC are trying to do. But I would just argue that we need to have a reset and we need to sit down with people in good faith. We need to stop assuming that everyone's just trying to get around the regs for the purpose of getting around the regs. There are legitimate concerns that people have about the way the existing regulations would affect what they do and affect it in a way that would change the nature of what they're doing. And that can't be the right result, that we force projects to just look more and more like TradFi in order to fit our rules. It also can't be the result that projects don't recognize the objectives that we as a regulator have. So we can both come to the table. Each of us has our objective and we can meet those, but I think we can only do it if we sit down and talk to each other.
Gabe, what are you feeling?
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So here's another question. You know, representatives of the commission have called for crypto firms to come in and register. But as we know, registering as a public company is typically reserved for the bluest of blue chip enterprises, such as Apple Inc. And it typically takes an over 10-year span for most private companies to reach the point where they can become a full-blown SEC registrant. Requires millions of dollars in compliance costs per year, oftentimes. And meanwhile, most SEC enforcement actions against crypto projects have seemingly focused on shutting down the potential SEC registrant. For example, in the SEC's recent victory in the Library case, the remedies phase of that has seemingly focused on causing the development company to drain all of its remaining funds to pay a fine and to destroy all of its remaining tokens so that there would no longer be an incentive for the company to continue working on that project. And essentially, there would no longer be a need for that company to register, and instead the entire thing would be shut down. Another interesting sort of data point within this is that, you know, if you look at the total number of existing tokens and you were to assume that all of them are securities with someone behind them that needs to register, that would probably exceed the total existing number of SEC reporting companies currently. Right. So there's a capacity issue and how would you ever do this quickly enough and so on. And there aren't really trading venues for tokens currently, as I understand it, for if they would be considered securities. Right. NASDAQ doesn't take tokens, for example. Right. So taking all these disparate things into account, how do you reconcile the calls to come in and register? What would a company that actually wants to follow this admonition do, and how would it work, and how long would it take, and how much would it cost? Do you have any sort of vision into that? And, you know, just comments on that in general would be great.
The first thing the company would have to do, or the project would have to do, is raise a lot of money from very patient investors who would be willing to wait for several years as the project went through the process. At least that's what it seems like, based on the experience of the few projects that have tried to go through the process. I think, as you point out, Gabe, that the public company registration model is not really the appropriate model for a lot of this activity. And so the come in and register admonition does not necessarily, on its own, it doesn't really do much, right? It doesn't grapple with the hard questions that we need to grapple with. I don't want to speak to the Library case specifically because it is still in the remedies phase. But I think we have seen in a number of instances that the result of an enforcement action is that there may be some talk of registration, but often it's just part of the settlement is that the thing will shut down or will stop selling to U.S. investors or U.S. customers, whatever you deem them to be. And in the instances in which registration has been a possibility, we haven't really seen that come to fruition. And I think that illustrates the fact that it really is hard to shoehorn some of these projects into the existing framework that we have. And so what I'd like us to do is let's try to be a little more productive here. Because as you say, there are a ton of these out there. And so if we're going to bring enforcement actions, this is a point I've made elsewhere, on a one-off basis, we're going to be doing that for hundreds of years. So that may not be the right approach either. Why not try to sit down and figure this out? And I think the way to go about doing that would be to put out a set of principles for each of these sub areas of crypto that we've run into, whether it's crypto lending, crypto staking, token registration, NFTs, stablecoin, whatever. And again, maybe some of this stuff is not in our bailiwick, but to the extent that we think it is, let's put out some principles. Let's have people come in a public roundtable. And I think that part is really important. Too much of this is being worked out in enforcement back rooms, which makes me very uncomfortable because it means that no one else has insight into what's going on. The person who's, or people who are settling, have a real interest in just settling and moving on. And you could end up with a result that works for one company, but not for others. if we were actually to get through one of these enforcement settlements with a workable framework for that entity, it might not work for anyone else. So have a public roundtable where these issues are discussed and you work through some of the generally, you know, the general issues, and then you can figure out how registration would actually work. You might come up with some kind of exemptive framework, which we have the authority to do. And then when people came in individually to apply for something, they would have that, all that background work would already be done. And so all of the focus of our staff's time would be on the unique aspects of whatever that project was trying to do. Something like that, I think, is the real way to move forward here. Now, even better would be if Congress said, hey, SEC, here are the areas we want you to focus on. Maybe CFTC is doing some other things. The banking regulators are doing other things. That would be helpful, but obviously the Congress has a lot of other things to work on. So in the meantime, we could be doing some of this work ourselves.
Commissioner, just a quick follow-up to Gabe's question. I know it's not the SEC's mandate to, you know, be like overly friendly to developers or anything like that, but it seems like a lot of developers I talk to are frankly just scared and leaving. Like, even if there were, you know, a clear path to follow and, you know, a formulaic policy that they could adhere to, it seems that there's just been a lot of damage in the hearts and minds of developers in the sense that, you know, for them, potential solutions are years away and they kind of just want to get started building. Eventually, those companies could turn out to become, you know, cornerstones of their industry in other countries, set up shop, develop a culture. And at that point, it's just too hard to come back. I guess, historically, do you view this as a potential issue? Or do you think that, you know, with the right approach and policy, that that issue could potentially be stemmed so that the U.S. can thrive here?
Well, I think it's certainly an issue, and it's one that I'm concerned about. I think it's never good to be in a situation where you have people thinking that, you know, even good faith actors cannot, or thinking that regardless of whether you're good faith, right, you're gonna meet the same reaction from the regulator. That's not a good situation to be in. But I do think we can turn it around, right? I think it wouldn't take that much for us to say, you know what, we're putting a pause on the approach that we've taken so far. We want to take a more proactive approach. And that actually could move forward pretty quickly. I mean, I think, again, it's complicated by the fact that there's some areas where it would be helpful for us to have more legislative authority. So I think part of the reason we've been taking this very broad approach with respect to what a security is because we're not used to, for example, regulating trading platforms that trade securities alongside non-securities. Is there any reason that we couldn't do that? I mean, I don't see why not, right? I think you could have a platform that trades both securities and non-securities. So we just have to sort of rethink some things, I think, in order to make this all move forward. And we just need to, you know, really, really send that message. I think it could turn things around, but I agree with you. I've heard from lots of people who have said they know a lot of other projects that are just cutting the U.S. out and they're moving out of the U.S. even though they'd rather build things here. A lot of the response you're going to get in D.C. to that is, well, kind of good riddance, because there is not a lot of love lost for the crypto industry at the moment. And some of that is really understandable, right? I mean, we've seen a lot of scandals. You know, lo and behold, human behavior is just the same as it is in other areas. And so when you have non-transparent, unregulated, centralized entities, they tend to do the same kinds of things that they do in other spaces. So my call has been to the industry itself, like, you guys should be working on some of this stuff yourself for your own good. You know, insist that everything be open source, insist that everything be fully transparent. If you are dealing with a centralized intermediary, you better understand what the terms are of that arrangement that you're in. And that entity has every interest, if it wants to keep its customers, of being very transparent about what those terms are and of trying to do as much as possible to open the books and show, yes, we actually do have assets backing what we say, you know, we have. And we can do proof of reserves and proof of liabilities. And we're not going to do it just once. We're going to do this frequently so that you can see. I mean, people should be taking advantage of the technology to be radically transparent. So I think there if regulators saw a little bit more of that going on, and if regulators saw some really powerful use cases, then I think there'd be more concern around seeing flight of people and projects overseas.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I know you've been on Chris Bleck's podcast, and this is a big thing he pushes, but even for on-chain smart contracts, the use of multi-sig governed proxy upgradable smart contracts where like six guys control the upgrade, you know, to me, it's an example of the industry shooting itself in the foot, and it's just not necessary. I think one of the things that you do get right is that the industry is also competitive, right? Like any other. And so, you know, if you sort of put shackles around your own feet, right, to try to be the blue chip of transparency, governance minimization, et cetera, and that somewhat reduces your agility, your competitive edge, even potentially the way that things are marketed, right? Because they're marketed in a more, let's say, sober fashion, and a competing project is out there marketing in a degen way, you know, it's very hard. So I think some projects will continue to try to be, you know, as ethical and transparent to the max, more than they're actually required to be. But on the other hand, you know, speaking as an advisor to many projects, there also is this pushback you get. Well, you know, these guys are out here doing this and no one's stopping them. So why should we do more than they're doing? So I think, you know, in the end, that's kind of why the people who most want to be ethical and transparent, they actually want regulation, as long as it's sane regulation, because it would be a level playing field, right? And so it's just another kind of chicken and egg problem within this.
Yes. I get that, right? I understand that, you know, there's the reason that you end up with some of these governance structures is because people are trying to move fast. They're trying to build things. And it can be really annoying to have to get the buy-in of a lot of people in order to do something. And so that's why we end up with centralized entities. But It really is important for people in the space to remember the underlying motivation for being here, which is that we have a new technology that enables us as humans to interact with each other in a different way than we have in the past. And it's not to say that the corporate structure is gone and it's never going to be used for anything. It's absolutely still very useful to have companies doing things, but this is a new opportunity to do things in a different way. And so, yeah, it may not seem seem in the short term as being anti-competitive, but if you end up with a treasury that, you know, you get really successful and you have this large treasury and you have six guys controlling the treasury, that's a real problem. It makes people really nervous, and including regulators like me. And so it's better to build that stuff in at the ground level. I mean, I can't tell you all how to run your industry, but I can say that it seems to me much more consistent with the fundamental principles to build in at the ground level the true rails for decentralization and for decentralized control, for transparency, for making sure that people who are participating have a say in what's going on. And that, I think, can really distinguish crypto from more centralized things. But, you know, it's like everything else. Like, you have to compromise. Sometimes you're trying for speed, and so you compromise security. Well, I mean, there are real consequences to that, right? But that's the whole dilemma of building something good in this space, is you got to figure out what the right balance is. And so maybe in that way, regulation can actually be a good influence, or the threat of regulation of centralized entities, which I think a lot of us would agree is a good thing, or an inevitability that there's going to be federal regulation of centralized entities. But that can actually push people to decentralize more quickly. And maybe that's that's a good influence. I don't think regulation is going to come in as the savior to get everyone's ducks in a row in the decentralized space. I think the inclination of regulators is just to say, no, centralize it and give us someone that we can sue if there's a problem.
I couldn't agree more. Moving, very well said, by the way.
It makes us just as uneasy when five people control a massive project.
That's right. Yeah, totally. Sometimes there are reasons at the beginning, you know, in the early stages, a good idea, but it needs to be sunsetted as quickly as possible. Moving a little bit beyond the pure crypto context, it seems the SEC is taking increasingly strong positions on expanding disclosure requirements related to cybersecurity practices, environmental friendliness, and similar areas, even for private funds and other private entities. You and some others have expressed significant concerns with this expansion. On the other hand, defenders of such rules point out that they involve disclosure that investors would consider material, and that mandating disclosure of material facts is within the SEC's remit. At what point do rules about disclosure morph into a form of backdoor conduct-based regulation because firms might begin tailoring their conduct to reduce politically unpalatable disclosures they would otherwise have to make? And is the SEC the appropriate agency to be administering such rules? What would be a better way for these issues to be tackled under the securities laws or otherwise?
So, Gabe, I like that question, and I think it's an important one for a crypto audience to hear, because the SEC has seemed quite hungry jurisdictionally in the crypto space, but I can guarantee you that our appetite does not stop at the limits of crypto. We are very aggressively trying to eat up jurisdiction all over the regulatory landscape, and part of that is, as you mentioned, climate rules. The EPA might be a better regulator of that, but you can do a lot through disclosure. And so we're using disclosure in that regard. Cyber is another great instance where obviously everyone cares about cybersecurity. It's the top of everyone's concern list. Having a public company make disclosures around cyber may well make a lot of sense. And we already have rules around that, as we do with climate, to be fair. All our rules say, if you have material risks, you've got to disclose those to people. So that could be climate, that could be cyber. But it seems that we're sort of getting in the business of saying, well, companies need to be focusing more on cyber. And so let's put in a bunch of disclosure requirements around cyber and see, if that will force more spending on cyber. I mean, that's certainly one interpretation. I think that is how I have read some of these rules that we're proposing, is that they're really putting us in the manager's seat at companies. And that's just not where we belong. We're a disclosure regulator. We are designed to help investors figure out whether they want to buy a particular company, and part of that may well be understanding the risks around cyber or climate or many of these other things that we're asking disclosure on. But it needs to be a principles-based framework, not a very specific framework that seems designed to sort of affect behavior.
Commissioner, to switch gears a little bit, I mean, over the past, so recording this on Monday, it's March 13th, over the very busy, sleepless weekend, a couple of major banks closed in the past couple of days. These include Silvergate, Silicon Valley Bank, and now Signature. I'm not exactly, I haven't delved overly deep into their financials, but my general understanding is that this was due to a mismatch on their books. So having, long-dated treasuries, being unable to liquidate them at par, having to liquidate them at a discount, and not being fully collateralized to meet their deposits. But I think we're seeing a lot of people in the media conflate that issue with, hey, these banks banked crypto, so they're going under, which is kind of confusing. I know it's not, maybe exactly up the SEC sector, but do you have a view on maybe like this Operation Choke Point that people have been talking about, or the banking calamity with respect to crypto?
Yeah, and I think it is mostly a banking issue, not an SEC issue, except that I will say that to the extent that we try to tell registered investment advisors or broker dealers that they can't have anything to do with crypto. That is sort of the same idea, where we signal, right, that it's going to be, we're, it's going to be difficult for you if you get involved with this sector. So just as that happens on the security side, that can happen on the banking side, where the regulators can sort of send this message, well, you better stay away from crypto. And the problem is that then you end up in crypto concentrating in a few institutions. I think one lesson that cuts across all the financial sector is diversification is really important. That's important for individuals who are figuring out where to put their assets. It's important for institutions also when figuring out what kind of business they want to do. So the healthiest framework is one in which you don't have any one institution too exposed to any particular sector. And so I hope that whatever we do on the regulatory side, whether that's here at the SEC or in the banking world, would be to encourage diversification.
Makes a lot of sense. More, you know, this is more of a question about how you view yourself and your role within the commission, and maybe more generally. But as you alluded to in the beginning of the conversation, you've become a very frequent and very thoughtful dissenter on the commission's decisions, and you've criticized the current commission outcomes and staff approaches on a variety of issues, both procedural and substantive. How do you see your role as a dissenter? What keeps you motivated to keep participating while often being a dissenter of one? You know, do you contextualize this within sort of a broader history of the evolution of regulations, and you want to create a record of a different thought process that could have been followed? Or, you know, just how do you see this, and what keeps you going?
Well, I like the commission structure, which is there are five of us, and the chair, he gets to set the agenda, and he gets to direct the staff. So he obviously has a little extra clout there. But I think having five people who have different approaches is healthy when we're thinking about regulation of such an important sector of the economy. And so I think it is important for me to express my views when they're different and to do so publicly. And I think it really is important to have someone on the commission who doesn't look to regulation as the first solution to every problem. I actually think regulation should be the last solution, because when you try to make decisions through the government, it tends to become very inflexible. It's difficult to adapt over time, and it's also it can affect people's incentives in ways that are not healthy and not good. So I think it's important to have that view and that voice out there. And I do, you know, my colleagues have open minds, and so I hope that I can continue to try to persuade them. And I think it's important that we not give up on the idea that we can actually shift the way an institution thinks about something. And so I think it's helpful to have a lot of different voices and to have people providing their input, whether that's from inside the commission, as I can do, or from outside the commission, as others can do, to get that point of view across. I mean, am I discouraged? I am. I'm discouraged by the fact that we haven't taken a more proactive approach in this space. And I think, you know, 2022 was a tough year, and I look at that and I think, you know, a healthier regulatory approach here actually would be better at sifting the good from the bad. It's really hard when you're in a framework that doesn't work, and that we're not making the adjustments that we should be making. It's really hard to distinguish who's out there just stealing your money and who's actually trying to do something valuable. And so that is really discouraging to me, because a lot of people have gotten hurt. And it's also discouraging to me to see people who have dreams of building something leave the U.S. I think this is the best country to live and the best country to build things. And I want people from all over the world to come here to do that. And that's what makes our country's so dynamic. And so it's discouraging to me when I see that too. And I, you know, I think there's some procedural problems with the way we've approached things that bother me too, because I care about government treating people in a way that's we should always be taking the high road as the government. So that discourages me too. But, you know, I work with a lot of really hardworking, thoughtful, intelligent people. And so that gives me hope. And I see people who are outside of the SEC trying to change things. And I appreciate those efforts as well. So I think at the end of the day, we need to be optimistic that we can change things. And this is a wonderful moment for us as a society to have some conversations about some really difficult issues. And crypto has brought those kinds of issues to the fore, whether it's thinking about, is our approach to money laundering correct? Or is our approach to thinking about decentralized human activity, is there a way for us to think about that differently? Have we approached financial regulation correctly, or are there ways we need to change that? I mean, these are really wonderful chances to think about some of those kinds of things, to think about the surveillance that we're doing in the traditional financial system. Does that make sense? And those kinds of conversations, I think, would be harder to have if we didn't have something concrete like crypto to drive those conversations.
Totally. Yeah, it really is sort of a paradigm clash, you know, in the sense of the whole world was built on intermediaries and regulating intermediaries. And now we have this new, you know, peer-to-peer technologically mediated way of interacting. Yes, of course, there's still some human power. You know, Angela Walsh, for example, has argued, you know, that Bitcoin miners are fiduciaries or intermediaries. But, you know, if they are, then they're really much more constrained fiduciaries, you know, because they have these technological shackles on what they can do. So it's still a very different paradigm. And I think you're exactly right. We're just kind of working through that as a society, but maybe with too much collateral damage and drama, you know, that isn't strictly necessary if we could all have a round table, as you say.
Yeah, I mean, there has been too much drama. And I think another point that's important for us to remind ourselves of periodically is that the government really is there to come up with a regulatory regime that the people want, right? That works for the people. And so sometimes we can get so caught up as regulators with the role we're playing. And again, the intentions are good, right? The intentions are protecting the American people, but we can sometimes forget that there's a cost on the liberty side, and we have to take that cost into account too. And so again, good moment for us to sit back and think, okay, wait, do we have this balance right? And what is it that the American people ultimately want? And that's why, again, I go back to, I would love to have Congress weigh in, because they're the ones who are politically accountable.
Commissioner, so I obviously, again, don't have the deep view on how the SEC operates and changes over time and evolves. But one of my concerns is that it seems like a very aggressive path forward, right? Like, there's lawsuits all over, there's dissenting opinions. It's a bit harder to change given the gravity of the SEC's place in the industry. Is there any color you can give, you know, the audience or listeners on what would be, you know, a conservative or you know, logical path to evolve the SEC's views? Or does it sort of devolve into something a bit more aggressive? And apologies if I'm a little off base here, but I'm just trying to figure out how.
No, not at all. I mean, I think that it is important for people to be talking to the SEC, to be telling us, you know, sort of how you think we can achieve the regulatory objectives that we have while also allowing things to move forward. And there has to be, you know, as I said at the beginning, we can't be in this dysfunctional place where neither side is talking to the other, right? We need it except through court, the intermediation of a court, right? We need to have some direct conversations. And it is doable to move an institution. I mean, we've got five of us, right? And you need to have three people voting for something in order for it to move forward. And so you can do the math and you can figure out how things you know, you can change people's views on things. As I said, my colleagues have open minds and they're smart and they're interested in these issues. And so I think they want to hear from people. I mean, as I said at the beginning, I can't speak for them, but I do think they want to hear from people. And so I'm, again, optimistic that things can be shifted. Again, it always helps when we get nudged by Congress. As an example, the SEC has quite a few abilities to make exemptions, and small businesses have constantly run up against a regulatory framework that seems really designed for bigger companies. And so sometimes they've come and they've said, hey, can we have an exemption to make it easier for us to raise capital in a way that still protects investors, but is more fit for purpose for a small business. The SEC has sometimes been slow about that. And so Congress came in with the Jobs Act and they said, you know what, SEC, you really need to make this a priority to try to right size some of these things and tailor things for smaller businesses. And so moments like that can happen, right? And so you can't give up on it just because it seems like an institution that's moving in a not very productive way, but I still think we can shift that.
That's awesome to hear. You know, I applaud everybody at the SEC for staying open-minded and being open to our views as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of work to do, right? Right. And I think part of it is just reminding it can be difficult from the regulator's perspective to see that it's worth spending a lot of time on something. I mean, we have a lot of other things on our plate. And if you see something and you're seeing fraud after fraud in the name of something like crypto, you know, you just throw up your hands and you say, what are these people doing? They're just all ripping each other off. Why should we build a regulatory framework for them? And so it can be hard to look down the line and say, you know what, I can see there's something in this technology that really is potentially pretty dynamic and pretty, you know, it's possible that it will change the way we do lots of things, right? It can be hard to see that if all you're seeing is a lot of speculation. And again, our markets operate on speculation. So speculation is not inherently a bad thing, but I think a lot of people who got into crypto just got into crypto because they thought they would become very rich very quickly because they were in crypto. And that it's just not a very compelling use case for someone who's thinking about, as a regulator, how should I spend my time writing a set of rules for fixed income markets, or should I be writing a set of rules for crypto? So you got to think about it from our perspective, too, of they're just always competing priorities. So tell us about those use cases. I think that can help us then think about this a little bit more, you know.
Yeah, that's really helpful. I'm unsure if Gabe has any gray hairs, but there also are a lot of down days and a lot of struggles, but it's worth it. But I'll switch to Gabe.
You could see the gray hairs in the beard here that weren't there a couple years ago.
Yeah, no, I understand it's been very stressful for a lot of people in the industry, and I apologize for that. I think, as I say, I think we could be doing better, and I hope we will do better.
That's really helpful, Gabe. I think you have one last question.
Yeah, I think we pretty much covered my questions actually. There was like one final like summary one you had, maybe, you know, since we only have a few minutes, you could ask that, or I could ask it for you. You know, essentially, a few years ago you proposed a safe harbor, you know, for tokens that essentially involved them being able to trade relatively freely, you know, but still covered by the fraud rules and so on. Obviously, that hasn't caught on. We've heard some rumblings about, you know, maybe some at the commission think a regulation ABS style path for tokens, maybe something that could be feasible. What's the next straw man, the next possible, you know, sort of model that we should be floating and exploring, and you know, where do you see this going at a high level, you know, to try to reach some sort of path forward on all this?
Well, for those of you who aren't SEC nerds, Reg ABS is Reg Asset-Backed Securities. It was a disclosure framework designed for asset-backed securities. And I think that example is a useful one to remind us that we do have the ability to craft regulatory disclosure frameworks for particular types of assets. And I really think in this space, that makes some sense. I put the safe harbor out with the idea that it would be something, and I know, Gabe, you've looked at that and suggested some ways to change it. But I think that the key point of that is that there are disclosures that would be more useful in this space than maybe some of the typical disclosures that you would get for a public company. There's some overlap, but it's certainly not the same set of disclosures that a token purchaser would want. And so we can think about something like that. And that is one of the reasons that I remain optimistic that we can get something done, because if you really sit down and you think about it, okay, what is it that a token purchaser would want to get? Then we can have a conversation about that. We can figure out what those things are, and we can do that. And it's the same with the trading platform, right? If we decide that we want to have federal regulation of platforms that trade crypto assets, okay, well, what should the rules be around those platforms? Those are very concrete things that we can sit down and do. So while the safe harbor, you know, hasn't been adopted by the commission, I think that it can form the kernel of a conversation that we could have about what those kinds of disclosures should be.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. And, you know, just to take another example, I know there were a couple projects that followed the Regulation A Plus path earlier, like in 2018, 2019. And none of those are still reporting under Reg A Plus. I think one of them, Stacks, sort of self-declared, we are sufficiently decentralized and the token's no longer covered by the securities laws and just kind of stopped. There was another one, I believe it was called Props. I may be misremembering that, but their statement was rather interesting because they said, well, every time we make a change to the technology, we have to amend our form and we have to get permission by the SEC to do that. And so, you know, just to take another example, I mean, just a rule about amendments, and obviously it would not be feasible given the pace at which things are amended, or, you know, the tech is amended, you know, to always be going through a new full, you know, process with the SEC to get that new kind of disclosure statement approved. So there are just a lot of mismatches like this that I think would have to be figured out before this would really work, correct?
Well, and that's why I think it would be so valuable to have a bunch of people in a room talking about that publicly, because then, you know, someone would say, well, it would be impossible for us to do X, and the other, and someone else might say, no, you actually could do it. Here's a way you could do it. And we could work some of these things out. We could figure out, what do you do in the case when the protocol, there's an upgrade to the protocol, it changes a little bit. How do you reflect that in a disclosure? Those are the kinds of conversations that we need to have, and we need to be hearing from people who know that the technology and understand what it would look like to actually implement these things. And so again, that's why I think we can do this, but we can't just sit in our offices here and write those rules without talking to people. And we certainly can't impose that kind of a registration regime through the vehicle of enforcement actions. So we're going to have to do that hard work. And I hope that 2023 is a time that we'll pick up the pen and start doing that.
That'd be amazing.
Commissioner, in closing, I'd love to hear about your, you know, future ambitions in your own role, right? I mean, I think everyone in crypto like really hopes you stay at it and look to stay in politics, but I was unsure whether you had ambitions to go in the private sector or if you shared anything there. It'd be really great just to learn more about yourself and where you want to go.
The only ambitions I have are to do this job as well as I can do it for as long as I'm in it. And then I have to wait until I leave before I can think about what I'm going to do next. But it's been a privilege to serve in this capacity. And I welcome people who can tell me how to do my job better. I know a lot of people have thoughts on that, and I welcome hearing them.
Is there any way that the crypto community broadly can help you more efficiently? And do you have any advice on ways that they think they're helping that are just straight up unhelpful to you?
Well, I mean, I like ideas, if people have concrete ideas of, hey, this is what a disclosure framework would look like, or this is what a framework would look like around custody. I like hearing those ideas. I do find it most useful to be with a group of people from different projects, different companies, you know, coming together and talking to me at the same time about issues, because I find that that discussion can be really helpful. I had the opportunity recently to have dinner with a couple different people within the DeFi space. That's really helpful. I'm particularly interested in trying to think about what we can do around DeFi to make sure that regulation takes advantage of the technology's ability to serve as a regulator of itself, or, you know, how does regulation interact with DeFi? That's an area of particular interest to me right now. But I always welcome talking to people. I often, when I go to a different city, I will tell people I'm going to be in that city. So if anyone wants to meet with me, and I really love the chance to talk to people, have been really grateful for people's willingness to take me up on that. My door is always open here too. People, if they're in Washington, stop by. I'd love to talk to you here. And so keeping those lines of communication open is the best thing that you can do.
Let me share, it's been an honor to have you on again. And for anybody saying that you can't contact the SEC, I mean, your ability to just hop on a crypto podcast all the time is straight in the face of that. So we're all really appreciated.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Thank you both so much. It's been a fun conversation.
Thank you so much, Commissioner.
Take care.